Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 19, 2018. Rebels and government are accused of abducting hundreds of South Sudanese civilians this year.
It is absolutely vital that there is accountability, and that includes the government urgently pursuing accountability, conducting a prompt, effective, independent and impartial investigation.
And more political detainees are freed in South Sudan.
The first release was the Upper Nile in a place called Mandeng, and then they were taken by helicopter to Juba. The second release was from the military detention facility to Jambia, which is a place on the equatorial region in the southwest of the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A new report by the UN mission in South Sudan accuses the rebels of the SPLM-IO of abducting 900 people and forcing 24,000 others to flee their homes between April and August, which includes the time the warring parties were negotiating a revitalized peace deal. The report also accuses government forces of killing civilians and destroying their property. Both sides deny their forces abused civilians. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
In its report released yesterday, the UN Human Rights Commission urged the SPLA-IO to release hundreds of abducted civilians in Western Equatoria. Elizabeth Rossell, media officer at the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, told UN-run Radio Miraya that the report details multiple cases of violence in Western Equatoria.
The report focuses on an upsurge in violence between April and August this year, principally in Gubadui and Tambura states in the Western Equatoria region. And it looks at the effect on civilians and details, the abductions, rape, looting, destruction of property by the SPLA IORM forces, and also refers to some of the attacks that were carried out by SPLA forces.
Throssell says the report states that three SPLA-IO commanders were involved in the attacks but does not name them. Throssell says Animes wasn't able to identify the individual commanders responsible for violations documented in the report, but she says the perpetrators must be brought to justice.
The report, we are saying it is absolutely vital that there is accountability, and that includes the government urgently pursuing accountability, conducting a prompt, effective, independent and impartial investigation into all the allegations of violations and abuses of international human rights and international humanitarian law in Western Equatoria.
South Sudan People's Defense Force spokesman Brigadier General Lul Rai Kwang denies government forces killed civilians or destroyed civilian property and suggests other rebel groups may be responsible.
That area is having so many rebel groups. One, the ones loyal to Bakasoro. We heard South Sudan National Liberation Army initially operated in that area. Yes, about 3 to 4 rebel groups that have been operating in that area. And basically, you find them putting the same uniforms we have been putting on. And you could not stop civilians from thinking that they could have been from the National Army, the SPLA.
SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampo Gabriel admits that rebel forces attacked a barrack in Western Equatoria, forcing many civilians to flee, but accuses government forces of burning houses, looting property and raping girls and women.
They said we attacked villages, but what we are aware of is we only attacked the barrack, or the military barracks in Maduro. That was in May 2018. We did not attack the village. We only searched the barracks. It was after the government had been discovered in Mandeng. So we went back, responded heavily, and captured the barracks and the whole county.
Gabriel denies allegations that his group abducted civilians. He says SPLA-IO fighters are protecting civilians in territories they control.
We are even not able to feed ourselves. How are we going to feed these 900? If we cannot feed these 100 soldiers of the SPLA-IO, how are we going to feed? That is really false.
Among the recommendations, the report calls for accountability and reinforcement of existing recovery and resilience programs to re-establish access to basic services, particularly medical and psychosocial support for survivors of sexual violence and for the provision of economic alternatives for young fighters. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
16 detainees were freed in Wau today after the International Committee of the Red Cross helped facilitate their release. 8 other detainees were released earlier this week. Ayen Dengbior describes what led to this day when the detainees could walk away as free men.
The ICRC assisted with the release of 24 detainees in 3 locations in the country this week, keeping in line with a mandate in the revitalized peace agreement signed by the warring parties. Erica Tovar is an ICRC spokesperson in Juba.
The first release was the Upper Nile in a place called Mandeng, and then they were taken by helicopter to Juba. The second release was from the military detention facility to Jambio, which is a place on the equatorial region in the southwest of the country. And the last release was in a place called Wau. And then in that place, we did not take people. There were 16. We didn't take them everywhere, but we did support them with the transportation.
This is the first release that the ICRC has facilitated in connection with the revised peace agreement signed last month, according to Tovar.
We started this week. The biggest one was today, 16 people. We are not being part of the negotiations between the parts, but we are helping the release of the detainees. What we do is we come and talk to the people to be released. We make sure they're okay with the procedure. We listen to them and see if they have any concerns before the release. And we also always bring a health staff with us to check up on the detainees and make sure they're okay to travel.
Due to privacy, the ICRC was unable to comment on the health conditions of the released detainees, although a medical professional was available to assess the detainees and ensure they were healthy enough to travel. The identity of the detainees has also not been released due to privacy, nor was any information released about the detainees' captors. The ICRC was not involved in the negotiations, but as a neutral facilitator, offered assistance when requested by the parties. The organization's press release announcing today's news said the ICRC regularly visits detainees to monitor their conditions and treatment. Tovar says they help the parties when they are asked to step in.
ICRC facilitates when the parts need it, but if they don't need our work, then they could also do it on their own, you know, so that, and that we won't know about these ones. And also we have to see that this is a big country, and a lot of this release could happen in isolated places where we don't even know, you know, through the media. So it doesn't necessarily mean that this number is the total number. It means ICRC have helped in the release of this amount of people.
The ICRC has in the past assisted with several release operations by both the South Sudan Army and opposition groups earlier this year. Ayen Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudan's deputy head of mission in Washington denies allegations of corruption in his country. Ambassador Gordon Boy told VOA's Africa 54 television program that his government is not holding political prisoners in Juba. Boy says South Sudan is a young nation with institutional challenges.
Well, first of all, I would want to correct because when people talk about corruption, you know, it has to be something tangible. For us, our government has been fighting corruption since before the independence. But you cannot just talk about corruption. The central report has a lot of weaknesses.
Yeah.
Number one, there are people they name, and then they cannot prove the allegations. For example, they name some leaders that they have looted money, they have houses. But even those reports were challenged.
What you're saying, as long as somebody cannot prove something, then perhaps it's not happening. Truth is, across the continent of Africa, in all so many countries where there's corruption, it is known that those who have access to power also have access to the purse. It is about stealing public finances. It's about being able to take away money that was meant for development. And many times, actually, it's the people in power who have access. Would you deny? Could you say all servants of the government of South Sudan or people or the politicians are clean people, they don't steal from the public?
Well, what I'm saying, I'm just reiterating the position of our government.
Yeah.
I think you remember in 2011, our president came out and said that there are, because of the weak institutions, there
yes.
were money that were not accounted for. But that one doesn't mean that there are individuals to be targeted that they have stolen money.
Yeah.
You know, when before even we became independent, after now, we have very weak institutions.
Yes.
So we don't even, if you look at the estates, there are estates where people are being paid in cash because there are no banking system.
Yes.
Our banking system is the Kenyan banks, and then they are not in everywhere. You will find them in Juba. So the modern way of doing business is not yet...
So there are loopholes in
there
the
are
system
there are
which can facilitate corruption.
Yes.
In essence, stealing of government
but
public funds.
When people talk about the stealing, it's a different issue. Because when you said about the stealing, it means that somebody taking a large chunk of money for his private use. That one has to be proven.
There is evidence
that, one is
that
not there.
Money has been taken, in fact, sometimes directly from South Sudan to banks in Kenya and Uganda. Money has been invested in houses in Uganda, in Kenya, in Ethiopia, and many times by very high-ranking officials in the government and even men who are in the opposition. That's known. Some of these people, we know where they live. People know exactly where they live.
Okay, now, when I think I will not talk on behalf of KCB, the Kenyan banks, because
yeah.
they can talk for themselves if
yes.
there is something like that. But if it comes to properties, okay, who are the people with properties? If you look at the Inner Project report, last time they reported that Riek Machar has a house in Kenya. It happened that Riek Machar didn't have a house, he was only renting, which in that information is wrong. They also allege that our president has a house. Our president doesn't have a house in Kenya. Mm-hmm. He was also renting from somebody. So the problem with that, okay, there are two ways of proving corruption. Either you prove it in the bank accounts, in which in that case, if it is a report from KCB,
yes.
it would make sense, or the properties within Kenya.
But,
and Kenya is very transparent.
But nevertheless,
you
can acknowledge there is corruption in government, and there are government officials who have been known to take money that didn't belong to them.
Well, I don't know those government officials as individuals, right?
But you know that.
But I agree that we have very weak institutions,
yes.
whereby the way we do things is not the modern way because we are still a very young
question
country.
Here. We're talking about there's a peace deal that was signed recently, and it was said that the political prisoners will be released. That hasn't happened. Why is that?
No, we released 20 political prisoners. The only people that have not been released, and I can name them,
yeah.
one is Peter Biarajak.
Yes.
Peter Biarajak, his arrest has nothing to do with the war. Or
he's an activist, actually.
He was not arrested because he was an activist.
Yeah.
I can tell you, Peter Biarajak's father is the Major General and Director of Procurement of the SPLA.
Yeah.
His father-in-law is the Minister of Labor. His
but
uncle
he,
is the
himself,
Chief of Staff
Peter
of the SPLA.
Samuel Duong.
We did not arrest Samuel Dong and Agri
yeah.
Idri.
Yeah.
These individuals are not in South Sudan. Anybody with a question should direct those to Kenyan government
mm-hmm.
because they were in Kenya. They disappeared in Kenya. So we cannot be accused of arresting people who disappear in another country.
Mm-hmm.
That is not our responsibility. We don't have them in South Sudan. But Peter Biarajak was arrested because of other issues. He was caught at the airport with a gun. So he has to go, he will be taken to court. That one has nothing to do with politics. But all the war prisoners of war
yeah.
and political prisoners have been released. We released 20, and we welcome anybody to check them.
Well, we have so many reports that quite a number of people are still held on.
Okay, the issue of
Corbino
Wall. Corbino
yeah.
Wall is not a political prisoner.
He's a businessman.
He's a national security agent of our government.
Mm-hmm.
He's not
well.
Only a businessman.
That's Ambassador Gordon Boy, Deputy Head of Mission at the South Sudan Embassy in Washington. He spoke with my colleague, Vincent McCorry, yesterday. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some South Sudanese refugees turn to farming to feed their families. Find out where when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who in your family do you admire the most and why?
My father, very influential in a very modest and diplomatic way.
One of my uncle. The reason why I admire him most was he's determined and he's the type that likes to share ideas with people.
Well, my wife, because he's my leader. He's the one who gives me what I want from her, for my children, even me also.
I love my young brother because we look alike, we resemble, so I love him.
I admire my daddy most because there was a divorce around 6 years and he took care of me throughout up till now.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese human rights activist is working to heal women who are experiencing trauma because of the conflict in South Sudan. Anyet Dewol says the situation in her country has affected many women who are left to take care of their families.
The testimonies are true. Juba is heartbreaking. There is hunger, there is depression, there is violence. There is uncertainty, and I think that those are all the things that are contributing. And the worst thing about that situation is that they always, it's like a vicious cycle. I saw very many sad things, and that's why we're trying to also in the roots, you know, even with the women there, like, you know, like increase in violence within the families, increase in alcoholism and other abuse. So, is to empower them with skills to be able to manage sort of their own stress and also to help the people around them with the stress that they're dealing with. I mean, the situation in Juba is beyond anyone's hands.
Talk to me about how you can help somebody get out of stress. I think it's easy to say we can help you out of your stress, but how do you really help these women who are going through a lot of burden on them?
Well, we took a training to them created by the Center for Mind-Body Medicine, and it is based on self-care and group work. So you sit together in a group and we teach them basically the physiology of stress and how it affects the mind and the body, and then give them the skills to use their body and their mind to be able to, like, counteract the effects of stress. You know, so if you see people with a lot of violence, that's a result of stress and trauma. People who are depressed, people who are paranoid, like, these are all the effects of stress. And because people have been in prolonged stress for such a long time, this is, it just keeps growing and growing and growing. And then the effects on other people is sort of like transferring of stress. So we teach women simple skills that they can use their own bodies, you know, like breathing, meditation, imagery, like to imagine something better, just to kind of like also get your creative juices going so that you know that, you know, some things can change, because the worst thing is being convinced that things will never change and you get stuck in a negative pattern of thinking. So we're teaching them skills that they can use in their own bodies to basically change the physiology of stress in the body.
How is the response? I mean, I know that when you talk to somebody who has never had meals for days, about living positive and imagining that there will be a time where you will have enough food, it doesn't sound realistic to me. How was the response from these women?
Well, we provided food during the training, so that was helpful. I mean, I would always recommend that, even if it's a simple meal, something to get them, you know, nourished, because food is also medicine. And then we just, it's like, it's an invitation for people to experience, you know. We're not giving any medicine, we're not giving any homework or things like that. It's just sitting down and taking minutes at a time to breathe, to use your own lungs to take in the air that is there for you to take, but to take deep breaths and to slowly exhale and see what happens in your mind. And even a few seconds of peace is like a huge relief for people.
That's Anyet Dewol, founder of the Roots Project, an initiative for empowering South Sudanese women through arts and crafts. She was speaking with me from Baltimore last week. As the world marks World Food Day this week, some South Sudanese refugees in northern Uganda have figured out how to produce their own food to supplement what they get from aid agencies. Mungume Debs Rwakarinj recently traveled to Uganda's Pagirinya settlement camp and has this report for VOA from Kampala.
Refugees William Lodumodi and Pauline Bako work together digging trenches at their farm in Pagirinya refugee settlement camp in the Adjumani district of northern Uganda. The two neighbors farm side by side and often share their harvest at the end of the season. NGOs supporting farmers in the camp encourage the refugees to farm jointly so it's easier to train them on modern farming techniques. Modi, his wife and their 8 children fled to Uganda from Kerepi, a former Eastern Equatorial state in 2016. Bako also fled with her husband and their 6 children from Kerepi 2 years ago. Bako says in her village she depended on farming for survival. Modi says before he started farming a little more than a year ago, his family would survive on maize bread, known in Uganda as posho and other small rations of food provided by the UN food program.
Since we have come here, we are just receiving these beans and maize cooking oil. We don't have groundnut for pest, so that's why we have engaged in farming. Those things can help us, more especially like this, a vegetable.
Modi and Bako grow groundnuts, cassava, vegetables, and pumpkins. Modi says before his family began producing their own food, older members of the family would sometimes skip meals and reserve the little available food for the younger ones. Speaking her native Kakwa language, Pauline Bako says until she started producing food at her camp, her children appeared malnourished because they were not getting a balanced diet.
The food that is given by the World Food Program is not enough. It is good that the host Hominte has given us land to farm. So this cassava and the other food that you can see will help me to get enough food so that my children can eat and get satisfied.
Both Bako and Modi say they are counting on a good harvest this season so they can feed their families and sell the surplus to earn a little money.
We are practicing this farming so that can earn from us a lot of food so that our family even can grow healthy. And we also support our children by paying their school fee when we cultivate it, when we harvest, it can help our children.
Modi used to work for the government of South Sudan as a driver, but would farm on weekends with his family. Modi says, aside from poor weather conditions, good farmland is scarce in the host community. Although the Uganda government does work with the host communities to allocate small plots of land to refugees to build temporary houses and produce some food. While Modi and Bako farm on the land government allocated to them, some South Sudanese lease land from the host community. Michael Amos Male works with the NGO Lutheran World Federation that helps train farmers.
We give them seeds, tools, then trainings on best good agronomic practices in order to manage the crops. There are crops that people could not imagine that could be planted in lines, but we plant in line for easy management. When there are pests, like in June, the crops were infested with the armyworm. Through the skill they got with me, were able to spray the maize.
The Lutheran World Federation also teaches the refugees good farming practices, including how to weed crops. The refugees say they hope to return to South Sudan one day soon. And when they do, they will farm the land and employ the modern techniques they have learned in Adjumani. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The U.S. Embassy in Rwanda wants to help preserve the memory of the country's 1994 genocide with a grant to protect artifacts and architecture at the Nyamata Genocide Memorial. The Rwandan National Commission for the Fight Against Genocide says protecting the objects will silence those who deny genocide and cultivate a never-again spirit for young people around the world. Eugene Uimana has details from Kigali.
The $100,000 conservation grant for the U.S. Embassy is to help protect the memory of atrocities that happened in Nyamata, Bujesera district during the 3 months of the 1994 genocide. Bizimana Jean Damascene is the executive secretary of the National Commission for the Fight Against Genocide. He says that those who were born in the genocide are nearly 25 years old, which means they don't really know the genocide and they don't exactly know the genocide means. When they come here at Nyamata Memorial Site and see the human remains and their clothes, it helps them to know the gravity of genocide. Thus, they learn the importance of knowing and preserving the history. The Nyamata Memorial Site is one of the 8 national memorial sites telling powerful history of the death of nearly 1 million people, most of them ethnic Tutsi.
Yeah. Ugoko means ethnic. Yeah.
This memorial was a Catholic church. Now it is the resting place for more than 45,000 victims. There are 40 cubic meters of clothes and other belongings of the victims who had sought refugee here. At Wednesday ceremony, U.S. Ambassador Peter Vrooman said the building keeps the memory fresh.
So it's terrible because these belong to living people, and you can see how they died. The holes from bullets, the cloths that were tied together. Behind maybe a victim's back.
Vrooman says the grant will help the commission to do more preservation work so that facts and evidence may fight genocide deniers today and in the future.
Will help retain for Rwandans in the future the artifacts of the people who perished. And even as there's a memorial for the human remains, the textiles will help for anybody who would deny the genocide happened, that these are evidence that it happened. So the preservation of this is critical for future generations.
The Commission for the Fight Against Genocide plans to use part of the grant to hire experts from the University of Pennsylvania to help design a system to preserve their victims' clothing. Some money will go to train Rwandan preservation workers and help keep the church as it was during the genocide. Jean Uimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
That report by Uimana from Kigali brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Jere Jere by Dynamic.
All right, Sudanese child. Ooh yeah. Ooh yeah, Ruka music. Auma. Yeah. Jere jere bidunia de
jere jere
sibuna si sambala
jere jere
suata ta dunia de
suata suata
nasi mutu sambala
suata
sunu batal fi dunia de mama
sunu bata
nasi maderu geni sawa
sunu bata
wenu salam takulio
wenu sala
Si maderu geni sawa
wenu sala
jiran bada mashaki
jiran bada mashaki
asana nami lotuko
lotuko lotuko yeah
do you faba ja fibe
fibe fibe
asana nami loko ya
loko ya loko ya ya
tere tere bidunia de
tere tere
sibuna si sambala
tere tere
Suatata dunia de mama
Suata
Nasi mutu sambala
Suata
Police dugu anakosaki Galiana mina Amerika
Galiana mina Amerika
City muana sakit
We have been listening to Dynamic with the song Jere Jere. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Let us know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also reach us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Suata ta dunia de
suata suata
nasi